Welcome to The Deduction, a podcast from the Tax Foundation, your independent guide to the world of tax and economics. My name is Garrett Watson, Senior Policy Analyst here at the Tax Foundation. Today, we want to take a more personal look at taxes and particularly their effects on small businesses and entrepreneurs facing the challenges of the COVID-19 pandemic. Over the past 8 months, the U.S. has seen tens of thousands of businesses shut their doors. And we think it's important to do our part to highlight the role tax policy can play in supporting small businesses and clearing a path for their post-pandemic recovery. We decided to go straight to a small business to hear their story. I sat down, virtually of course, with Josh Chapman and Bob Huntley, founders of Black Narrows Brewing in Chincoteague, Virginia, to discuss why they started out as entrepreneurs, how taxes affect their everyday decisions, and what it's been like for them in 2020. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Thank you, Josh and Bob, for providing your experience here today, for showing how the tax code can potentially be improved for entrepreneurs and small businesses, and really telling your story for folks who may want to see a real-life example of how tax policy can be improved for small businesses. That's especially true now, of course, in the context of an ongoing pandemic and economic crisis that has put brand new challenges in front of business owners like yourselves. And as policymakers explore ways to help businesses, as well as finding places in the tax code to remove barriers that either serve as a roadblock for short-term recovery as we get out of this economic crisis, and as a way to remove tax challenges in the long run, so that both of you can flourish in your business and businesses across the country can get us back on track to hire more, to expand, and to improve our living standards over the long run. And so with that sort of background in place, just want to start at the beginning to really give folks a sense of what motivated y'all to start your business, Black Narrows Brewing in Chincoteague, Virginia, and what was your broad path of getting there at the very beginning?
The fame, I think, was really the biggest thing that drew us into it. You know, all the notoriety is a big part of it.
Do you want to describe, maybe very briefly for folks, what market you're in, what you do? That might be helpful before we dive into how you went into it.
So we are we're a small, what you would call microbrewery, 5-barrel, which means we produce in one batch about 150 U.S. gallons of beer at a time. We are primarily on-site focused, which means we're really here for people to come in, do community together, and enjoy craft beer that's been produced on-site. So we got to where we are in a normal sort of, you know, zigzaggy way. I grew up coming to Chincoteague as a kid all the time from the DC Nova area. It's an easy drive. It's roughly 3 hours, not much traffic once you get out of the city, obviously. And it was just a fantastic place that was still kind of what I grew up with, where it was Main Street America, very natural and outdoor focused, a lot of cultural and historical avenues to go explore if you're a family. So we fell in love with it when I was a kid. And then as I grew up, my, at that time, girlfriend, who is Bob's daughter, oldest daughter, she came on a family vacation. She fell in love with it. So we ended up getting married on the beach 14 years ago this June. So we always had in our heads, we should do something in Chincoteague at some point, because we love this place and there's so many things that are reminiscent of how we grew up out there. So I had bounced around doing some different things. I was a pastor and then a chef, and then eventually I became a brewer. When I became a brewer, I knew that was the last thing that I really wanted to do. And at that time, the entire Eastern Shore of Virginia didn't have a craft brewery, which, especially within the Commonwealth of Virginia, was kind of an anomaly, because Virginia has fantastic craft breweries and a large number of them. So the fact that there had never been one on the Eastern Shore of Virginia seemed like, for us, a prime opportunity to come out, do something that we were passionate about and a place that we cared about. So
how would you describe Chincoteague for someone who may not have been there before, is interested, they ever do pass by and are interested in Black Narrows and stopping by? How would you describe the community that you're situated within on the Eastern Shore of Virginia?
So it's a very small community, very family oriented for the most part. It's definitely a tourist destination in many ways. I mean, the season here really focuses on spring, summer, fall, and primarily we're busiest in the summer because it's a vacation spot for families. People like Josh's family, their families have been coming here for generations. and they come to the island to just relax, get away from the big city, unwind, spend some time in nature, go to the beach. We have Assateague Beach right here. And of course, one of the most famous things about Chincoteague is we have the wild ponies that live on Chincoteague and Misty and the whole story there. So that's a huge part. And then every summer, except this last summer, they do the pony swim, which, you know, the island normally has a population of several thousand people. And the week of the pony swim, and especially the day of the swim in July, the last week of July, the population here will swell to 30,000 people or more. So it's a huge tourist attraction, a huge tourist area, but it keeps its quaintness, its small town feel throughout all that. And when people ask me, I kind of tell them, hey, it's kind of like being at Mayberry RFD. It's just kind of a small, really cozy town that's family focused. And we wanted to be a part of that and be something that wasn't just here to take in the tourists. We wanted to be the social spot, that third place that people talk about for even the locals, so they could come and just have a place to relax and enjoy a craft beer.
We've mentioned a little bit too here, just as a way of background, that you both are running a small business, and we also talked about mentioning entrepreneurship. Do you two consider yourselves entrepreneurs in this venture? And what does that term, when you think about it in the context of your work and your business, mean to you?
I would certainly consider us entrepreneurs. And I think one of the great things about being an entrepreneur is that you don't have to look a certain way to be one. I think entrepreneurs are people who start things. And that's really kind of it, right? There's a large risk involved in starting anything, especially a business. So, I mean, I would definitely consider us one. I think it's been a privilege to be that, to take that on in this place, because I think in its best iteration, an entrepreneur is somebody who starts something so that they can benefit the community, the people around them, uplift the local economy and what's already going on, the culture and the history of things that are surrounding them. So, and that was definitely our goal as we went in, was, you know, attempting to be somebody who started something so that we could take the baton of innovative businesses that had been on Chincoteague in generations past and continue the traditions and culture that were already here into the future.
And then that goes right into what was going to be my next question, which is some of the challenges that you faced as small business owners, and especially in that very critical time when you were just starting up, when you had just gotten there, were feeling out the community and trying to get folks hired slowly but surely to help expand your operations. Is there anything else you want to mention about that sort of time period, which is pretty critical in getting your name out there? Not obviously word of mouth about your brews and getting it on the right foot.
Well, I just think some of the bigger hurdles we ran into really were just things that were unknown. You know, we had a significant amount of money to invest, but it obviously wasn't enough. We realized that quickly. So we had to get an SBA loan. And anytime you deal with any kind of a government program like that, there's a ton of red tape that goes with it. We fell behind on our schedule. We ended up, instead of opening in a summer or spring, we ended up opening on New Year's Eve. And it wasn't the peak time of year to be doing that. So there were just a lot of challenges with the build out and the construction and just so many unknowns that we had set goals and a plan, but your plan, like anything, goes to pieces as soon as you start to enact it and engage it, right? So so we had to adjust and flex. And over time, I think we've done a good job of that. But we still aren't where we really had hoped to be at this point, but we're still here. We're talking to you guys. So that's a plus right now.
That's definitely a win, especially with everything that's happened through 2020, which has been a challenge, to say the least. How have you seen taxes play a role in your business in terms of either the beginning, the setup, or your ability to expand over the last couple of years? How have you all thought about that in terms of trying to comply and understand with all your tax obligations?
So one of the things that we realized pretty quickly was neither of us, no one in our family had been a business owner. I was Navy for 23 years and then a defense contractor, but I was never in a position where I could run a business or have a business. So we knew right away we needed help. So we got a good accountant, and our accountant has really been the person who's kept us on the tax side out of trouble and helped us, you know, guide and direct us in some of our decision making. You know, we still were in year three. We still have not made a profit. So we haven't had to pay any kind of income taxes from a business perspective. So the income tax side of it really has not impacted us as much. Here in Virginia, we do have obviously excise taxes as an alcohol producer. We pay federal excise taxes. We also pay personal property tax here in Virginia on our equipment and our hard assets. And we also, of course, have to collect sales tax, not only for the state, but we also have a local Shingatee meals and beverage tax that we have to collect. So all those things are somewhat complicating in how we handle those. We didn't necessarily know everything about how to deal with that. But as far as investment, biggest thing is the personal property taxes. We actually just bought a canning line. It was the first it was the first real significant investment we made other than our pizza oven for assets and equipment to try and help grow our business. And we haven't started paying property taxes on that, but those will be coming and it'll just add to our bill. You know, we pay about $3,000 in personal property taxes every year, which isn't a lot, but for a business on our scale, you know, that's a month of malt purchases or a month of rent or, you know, those taxes are definitely something we have to consider. And it does impact our decisions on what we can do for building out and growing for the future.
Yeah, a lot of folks don't realize or they think of property taxes, and we've seen this a lot at the Tax Foundation, they just think of taxes you pay on real property, right, on your house or on land. But in many states, Virginia being one of them, you actually pay property tax on tangible capital goods that are being used productively in a business. And even though you're not making a net profit, you still have to pay tax on right. equipment that otherwise would be used productively in the business. And it's something we've been educating folks on, and this is a great example of that. You mentioned, right before getting into each of the tax types, which I think we'll revisit, the need to get an accountant to ensure that you all are complying with the code. And you mentioned that it has affected your decisions. I'd just like to know, how has the tax code and its complexity changed any of your decisions as it relates to your business, either in terms of decisions to not expand further or distractions from the core parts of your business? How has that affected you on a day-to-day basis when it comes to your decision-making as a small business owner?
You know, I think the biggest thing is it's always a consideration when we're trying to decide, like the canning line. You know, our biggest decision was in the off-season, our revenue because of COVID and all the restaurants and bars shutting down, we were doing a lot of keg distribution in the off-season. In the summertime, we're busy enough that we barely can produce what we can sell in-house in a normal summer. We do some distribution in the summertime, but it's fairly limited to in-house. So we knew we needed a revenue stream, so we were distributing kegs. And that dried up now that bars and restaurants are extremely limited on seating capacity, and they were shut down for a while. So our distributor told us, you know, I really can't do anything with your keg beer. There's not a market for it currently. So we had to make a decision on the canning line. And to be honest, it's more about revenue, cash flow in the off season. But we have to think about the impact of that. And we refer to our accountant quite a bit when we have those kind of questions, because it's not only a one-time tax that, you know, we pay, it's every year, even though there's that tax will go down, it still is there every year. So it's something we have to factor into our cost and our overhead over time.
You also mentioned, in addition to the property taxes that you have to pay, the sales taxes, which exist at the state and then separately at the local level in Chicoutimi. And I imagine that may actually play a role in, you know, the pricing of your brews and your beverages and sort of educating folks on that when they're coming in. I know, Josh, you've spoken a little bit about that. Can you walk us through how that works in the context of your customer-facing side of the business and how that's impacted how you've been running it?
Yeah, so it's especially unique for us as well because we are, during our busiest time on-premise, it's because of the tourist influx, and we get a wide dispersion of people from different states, some of whom don't have sales tax. So you have people come in, and if you say a beer is $5, they just give you a $5 bill, assuming they paid for the beer, and they're kind of confused as to, what do you mean it's $5.56? Like, what are you talking about? That doesn't make any sense. So that's a microcosm of kind of the foreplanning that we have to put in to all of our beer pricing to consumers, because for us, what is most important is figuring out how we can always increase that average ticket sale, right? And when you, the consumer, order a beer, and instead of being $5, it's actually close to $6 after taxes, that directly impacts how much you're going to spend while you're here, right? We've got our own margins we try to hit between labor, between the cost of goods sold, the yields that we get. But then to have to try to figure out what the consumer perception is going to be on what would work for us plus 10.3%, which is what we have to add on between the state and local thing, is a big deal. And especially when we get into higher priced beers, things like that, it's really tough to, at some point, price beers the way that we need to for ourselves as a business, knowing that that extra 10% that's going on top of it is going to perceptually make it seem that much higher to the customer. And they don't care that it's a pass-through, right? And that it's not us doing it, quote unquote. It's, you know, it's the state and the local government. It still hits their wallet the same way. So it definitely impacts how we look to price our beers, because the customer perception of what they're doing directly impacts our average ticket sale. And that's what drives our business. So we have to look at not just what goes into from our material side and labor side, how we price the beer, but what the extra tax percentage is going to be and how that looks to the consumer on the back end. The difficult thing on our side is that the beers that take the most time, that have the most exotic or interesting ingredients, especially because we focus on locality in all of our beers. It's one of the ways that we wanted to be a good community partner. We want the supply chain from the field to the consumer to be uplifted as we operate, right? So all of our beers use 100% Virginia grain, both from the field to the maltster and everything. We futures contract with local corn growers and hop producers. So we pay a premium to help be a part of our local agricultural and aquaculture communities, right? A lot of times those are going to be more expensive items anyway. So then the beer needs to go up in price. And that 10% is proportional, right? So the impact that that 10% tax has on the beer to the consumer for a beer that is more costly to make, both in labor and in goods, because we're trying to help the local economy, it's that much bigger of a whammy than if we were to go with whatever the cheapest, you know, non-local ingredient was, and we could skim the price off the beer. So it's a frustrating, you know, side of the same coin, the fact that, like, we do our best to hope to be a part of these local economies, and then at the same time, to do that costs more. So then because it costs more, the punch is harder to the consumer on the back end.
A big part of your cost input is the labor on the service side. And of course, tax policy plays a role there too. How has it, in addition to this issue with pricing and the way in which it might reduce tips, how has that impacted your ability to either hire workers or retain and pay competitively to those workers as you think about expansion opportunities and especially navigating right now with the restrictions in place?
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I know one thing, and it's not necessarily so at all. And this is one of the big things with taxes, right? It's that it all adds up in the end. And at the end of the day, it's like the same as the consumer having to pay $5.56 for their beer instead of $5. They only have one well of money, and we do too. So all these small things in the end that we have to pay affect what we can choose to pay. Payroll taxes, that was a big eye-opener for me personally, because I had not been a business employer before, right? So I'd never really seen that end of things. I just knew that I paid my Social Security and Medicare and all that stuff in the back end. But then the realization that on the business end, we have to do the same thing up front. Now, again, it feels like we get pushed into a role where we're the bad guy, where I tell somebody, you make $7.50 an hour, And I wish that it could be more, when in fact, they don't even get $7.50 an hour because they're paying taxes on the back end anyway. But I'm paying them more than $7.50 an hour. I'm probably paying them $8.50 an hour with all the stuff that we pay ahead of time, which I'd rather just pay them $8.50 an hour than $7.50 an hour, right? I mean, that directly impacts for us, I feel like, what we could do for our staff consistently, because their wage is their wage plus X percentage to us all the time.
That's very important, especially as we think about people trying to get rehired and pursue opportunity after the pandemic eases. The other set of taxes you had mentioned earlier on, Bob, was the excise taxes separately on beer as well. And that's an interesting sort of industry-specific tax that has been assessed. And of course, there's been some relief passed on the federal side by Congress to provide a little bit of relief to craft brewers and others in the broader alcohol space temporarily. How has sort of these excise taxes affected your business? And has the relief that's important to place temporarily been a reprieve at all in your space?
Well, the relief on the federal excise taxes, it's like anything Josh mentioned. You know, what we have to pay up front determines, you know, what we have available to do, grow with, to do different things with. The federal relief was basically they cut it in half for us. So we're kind of unusual from a brewery perspective in the sense that we're very small. We're a microbrewery. You know, we're not producing hundreds of thousands of barrels a year. So the excise tax in the big scheme of things probably is not hugely significant to us. But if it doubled, that's just one more bit that went back out, right? So we're hoping our legislators and Congress and the Senate and, of course, the president sign an extension to that tax relief for the excise tax on the federal level. We've not seen that relief on the Virginia side. Virginia has not changed their excise tax. So that's more than what we pay at the federal level currently. But again, because we're not a huge production brewery, you know, that excise tax is manageable, but it does play a role in, you know, impacting our bottom line.
Overlaying all of this, all of these issues you're dealing with in normal times, we have this sort of world historic pandemic that hits us at the beginning of the year that I'm sure as a service industry that's bringing people together, this crisis has been a new challenge for your business, for your community. How has the pandemic and the related restrictions led you to adapt? How have you thought through that as things have reopened? I'm sure folks would like to get a sense of a business owner's perspective on how that challenge has been this year.
I mean, it was definitely tough. There's so much unknown in business anyway, having this seemingly come out of left field when we're doing our best just to navigate, you know, normal small business ownership was definitely a curveball that we weren't quite ready to hit. But I will say the nice thing about it being family was, you know, nobody was walking out on each other, obviously. So it was a good opportunity for us to sit down and go, well, we're going to get through this one way or the other. So how are we going to do it? I think it forced us a little bit to adapt in ways that maybe we wouldn't have done, at least as quickly in, you know, in a different environment. And a lot of the ways that we've adapted, I think, have at least now kind of really come to fruition, allowed us to see some new avenues to viability, to increasing our impact in the community. So that's been really, really good. We definitely feel like there have been silver linings in this whole COVID season that we have learned personally in the business. So
we are hearing here in DC that there might be an opportunity for a second round of business relief, potentially, especially so if the pandemic worsens in the winter and we do have to make certain policy changes to help slow the spread of the disease. If Congress does consider another round of relief, either similar to or even very different from what we saw in the CARES Act, what would be the most impactful in your view to help your business and community through that difficult time if that ends up happening?
I mean, I think the PPP was big because it allows you to keep staff on, right? The payroll, even if you run into a situation where we have to cut back on how many people we can seat inside, right? Or something to that effect, I can continue to make payroll and pay the employees at least at some level. The other thing that helped us a lot that I don't think is talked about very much or you don't hear about is the SBA actually paid principal and interest on current SBA loans that were already out there for 6 months. So we happen to have a very large SBA loan, in at least in our scale, it was large. And that loan has always been a challenge for us because in previous years, when interest rates were not so low, that interest kept climbing. And it's a variable interest rate loan. Fortunately, the rate's gone down again, but that loan was a huge burden on us, a huge challenge. And the CARES Act paid for 6 months of that loan. So that was another thing that was very helpful to us. And in addition to PPP, that's an area that I think small businesses that have those kind of loan burdens through the SBA, if they can make, again, another period of time where they can support small business by making those loan payments, that would be huge for us.
It'd be important for policymakers to start thinking through that now as I think about relief moving forward, both on the loan side and for any tax relief that's provided to folks. Sort of zooming back out, sort of longer term, what do you think? We've mentioned a lot of sort of challenges in the tax space, both in terms of the cost and time of complying, having to work with an accountant to make sure you're complying with the law and all the variety of taxes that are. Any individual one might not be a big problem, but altogether create a barrier to expanding your business. What would you communicate? What would be your core point to policymakers as they're thinking about making tax policy or changing policy to be helpful to entrepreneurs like you moving forward? If you could tell them one thing, what would it be?
For me, I think it would just be that when you're considering tax policy, you know, we realize that, again, we're part of that revenue stream from the local level on up to the federal level. But all businesses are not alike, and small businesses have very different needs and issues than large corporations. We were built under the C corporation designation, but because we're a corporation doesn't mean that we're anything like a large corporation. So tax policies really, I think, need to be considered at all levels, not just how they impact large corporations who employ thousands of people. I get that. Those are the people that really pay the bills. But in many ways, small businesses, you know, we hear a lot about small business as a backbone of the United States and the economy, but I'm not sure that's always considered when tax policies and other federal policies are implemented and put in place.
One of the things I think that would be really beneficial as well is that so many small businesses, you know, have a similar story as us, where they're trying to do something they're passionate about and make a big difference in a small place, right? If we're already trying to do that, and the story behind various taxes that we pay as a small business is that those taxes enable, you know, community projects that have to happen, local infrastructure to be built, all these different things, it'd be really nice if there was some sort of dissemination of that information back to the small businesses as well. Because it'd be nice when people come in for us to be able to say, yeah, we do, you know, 10% tax on our beers, you know, here's where that's going, so that you know when you pay $5.56 instead of just the $5 that we're charging, you're, you know, filling roads outside, you're helping broadband internet come to rural areas that have, you know, low-income communities that otherwise would be at a disadvantage nationally. Like, those sorts of things really matter. All of a sudden, 50 cents on top of your beer doesn't seem like that much when you know the people that you're helping out around you. But it can be really, really difficult. And on top of everything else that we have going on, it isn't our responsibility to go find that information out, package it in a way that's communicable, and then, you know, get it out to the consumer in a way that educates them well. So I think that would be really helpful as well. Because I know, again, like Dad was saying, a lot of these taxes, they're not intended for harm, right? But it sure feels that way when we don't have the information to give to the consumer, especially with sales tax, right? Let alone to ourselves when we're paying for us personal property tax on stuff that we feel like we've already spent an insane amount of money on American-made equipment and all these different things. It'd be nice to know where it's going so that we can repackage that and kind of get it out.
Yeah, being able to connect any particular tax to the services that folks are getting and being able to trace that and make decisions from a democratic perspective, from a policymaking perspective about whether or not that makes sense is really key.
Well, and I mean, we are a farm-to-table brewery, right? And people love that farm-to-table concept. They like to know from whence their thing comes. It shouldn't be any different than taxes.
That's exactly right. That's a great way of putting it. Well, those are all my my broad questions for both of you. And I'm sure it's been a really valuable insight for our listeners about how entrepreneurs and small businesses like yours are being impacted, not only by long-run policy, but also in this current time, given the pandemic and the policy response to it, and how we can improve tax policy to help folks in the real world. So Bob and Josh, really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us today.
Yeah, thanks.
Our pleasure.
And that wraps up this episode of The Deduction. We'd love to hear what you think about this podcast. Please let us know at taxfoundation.org/podcast.